This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Seeberg. Hello, still good morning, almost afternoon. Hello, good afternoon, good evening, dear listener, wherever you are.
Peter, in this episode, we want to talk about what we learned from our event AI at the Danube last week. We spent 3 days in Linz at Keba and NXAI. Thanks, guys. And we had 3 speakers, Peter, and please go on.
Yeah, did you return home safely?
Yes, I returned home safely, and yeah.
By boat or by train or?
By car. By boat, yeah. We had a boat trip on the Danube, right?
It wasn't really the final. We had a smaller dinner in the evening.
Exactly.
And only you and I had a very, very short breakfast because I had to leave.
Yeah.
But that was the kind of the final official thing we had. I think I recall when you asked me, was it a week or two ago, just before the event, what was I looking forward to? I believe I said Linz, and I must say, and of course, we'll talk about the details of our conference as well. Linz, a beautiful city in Austria.
AI powerhouse.
AI powerhouse, right.
Yeah, we learned
a
lot.
Compare it maybe to what Eindhoven is for the Netherlands, is maybe Linz for Austria as far as AI is concerned?
Yeah, I think so. I was surprised that I think 5,000 jobs in software development and AI in Linz, that's huge, right? For a city
that's
like Linz.
That's huge. Yeah. Maybe we come to the actual tobacco factory where NXAI is based. Yeah. So looking back, maybe there's one specific topic that I would maybe pick out later on because it was rather important. But I think the most important thing, just looking back again, being modest and all, but still, we bring, you know, roughly 25, 30 people from the industrial AI section, decision makers, contributors together. And at the end, we always do this plus minus thing, and everybody's so happy. You know, the only thing they suggested a couple of times in a row,
names could be printed thicker.
the names on double sided, yeah. Right. So we're very happy with them. And I think the color of the plus and minus was wrongly chosen.
Yes.
And that's it. You know, and people are so happy. And we are very happy of bringing the industrial AI community together. We learn a lot, of course, on the way. That's more on the side, I guess. But it's more important that the participants come in, we sit together. We've been doing this, is this now the fourth time, maybe?
Fourth time, yeah.
Fourth time.
We started so in the monastery, then Alps, then Black Forest. Alps again is the fifth time, and now it's
the fifth time.
Danube, yeah.
Right, and we're looking forward to the next ones again. So we have established a kind of a certain rhythm with everybody is so happy with. I mean, typically, depending on where we are, you know, depending on how long people have to travel, right? We start at the Wednesday. I mean, many people arrive right at the Wednesday, not official, but people like meeting up, and we eat something, and then we really start on the Thursday morning, right? So, as I said, one specific topic, and then we have these 3 themes. So we have 3 breakout sessions, and all the 30 people or the 25 people, they all go through the 3 breakout sessions. And the one that kind of stood out for me, and of course, I've only been part of those 3 that I did, and you did 3 other ones. We are typically not together in the same.
For sure.
But that topic was very similar to the podcast we did just 2 weeks ago, you know, from Tom Cadera with Marco, and it was all around UX, XAI. I mean, the question was kind of brought up by Tom at that time. He was not here this time. He's been joining us before, and he had been reading this paper, which Marco was a co-author of. And it involves, you know, law, regulation, AI Act, and many other laws. Yes, sure, we're very good at that, but it's not only in Europe, I think. So, and then we have the industrial AI folks, decision makers, contributors, product managers, developers. And then Tom had been suggesting that, or had been asking, what is then the role of user interface design for making or showing industrial AI as explainable AI?
Sorry to interrupt you, but before we go into the deep dive, I would like to introduce our speakers, our workshop's hosts, because that's important.
We had most certainly, please do.
Professor Dr. Marco Huber from Fraunhofer IPA, and then we had Dr. Jan Kutnick. Many of you probably still know him from his time at Nathans with Professor Dr. Jürgen Schmidhuber, and Dr. Sebastian Böck from NX AI. And these three guys are our speakers, our workshop hosts, and they have their specific topic. And then there's an open discussion about a lot of topics, right? And one topic was, as you mentioned, explainable AI user experience.
Very good point. And that came out of the Marco Huber track that I was in. So as you said, Jan Kutnick, and his overall theme was blue collar AI. And then Sebastian concentrated on XLSTM, and Marco has been doing for, well, I guess then the fifth time in a row, he always does use cases. And then we sit together before the first lunch and for about an hour time, I guess, and everybody under these major themes can, in addition, put all the things that they would like to talk about during the 2 days, right? And this was one specific topic that came out during the session with Marco. And it seemed to be so important. And, you know, we've been discussing backwards, forwards. If you and I, you know, for a next time, we're going to make that a theme, or even that it's maybe even so big that we're going to be doing something separate to it.
Yeah, I found it very exciting at Marco's workshop that large companies such as Continental, Andritz, or Bosch now have many AI projects, of course, and now have to organize them, bring them into structure, organize responsibilities. And that's a lot of work. The Conti guy and the Andritz guys, they were, that's so difficult to organize this in the big. And the idea of a clearing center was discussed, you know, where one person or a lot of person are in charge to clear the use case. That was very interesting to define a clearing center, something like that. Yeah.
I heard that back during, that is a typical, you know, the last half hour we look back on the conference and we actually forgot maybe Jan and Sebastian to look back as well. That was our small problem. But we had at least Marco look back. And yes, he referred to that. And then I was thinking of what I've been doing for a couple of years now when I do trainings. That's a very similar kind of thing where I have a couple of hours at the beginning of a day, maybe, you know, whatever, 5-10 people attending, and they all should bring their thoughts, their ideas of what could be an industrial AI typical project. And then after, maybe depends on the number of people, maybe after the first coffee or after the lunchtime, we then start talking about what are the criteria for deciding. And so I wasn't in that session that you were part of, but because at least then, so, and that's a wonderful thing to have, right? And of course, if you're a big company, then suddenly there is not only 10, but maybe 50 or 100 different projects. Now, which one are you going to do, right? All of them are going to cost investment, some money, small, big. So you're probably going to need some kind of criteria. Now, when I've been doing this starting a couple of years back, the first criteria was, is the question, do you have data? Now, as I already suggested, I think in the meantime, we've moved on so far that you could almost assume that those people within the bigger companies that, you know, make suggestions for these projects, that they know that you need data for being able to do some kind of artificial intelligence, machine learning, Gen AI, whatever. But nevertheless, that was just an example, right? So when I was doing them a couple of years back after lunch, already from maybe, let's say there were 20 different ideas, maybe 5 already would fall off because, oh yeah, you're right, I don't have data. And I believe that if you have maybe, you know, whatever, 100 projects in a big company today, I would assume at least on the question of do I have data or not, maybe none will fall away. But if you go to the quality of the data, then you can already say, okay, yeah, the data I have is really good, or the data I have is really bad. And then you can start making priorities and say, okay, if the data is bad, let's first do a data quality project before we, etc. So that's, yeah, I heard that. Very interesting. But it's a wonderful thing to have or not. I think as a big organization, you have a problem if people are not suggesting you projects, right?
Exactly. But one participant told me that it's getting huge and he or she gets requiries from the board. Which tool can we use? Is it and how do we use that? And that's not their topic, right? They are R&D. They are not responsible for AI tools in the company. Yeah.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, the use cases, Marco Huber also recommended then creating a backlog, because AI ideas that cannot yet be implemented should not be lost, you know? So maybe in the near future, there is a solution, or there we have more data or better data. And that's interesting to create a backlog also. Yeah.
I hear again another criteria, right? So on the list of criteria, and the data one was the old original one from 5, 10 years ago. And yeah, when he suggests maybe what I call it, you know, can you implement the capability of being implemented? I don't find the right word, but exactly. So if you say no, maybe it's the window, right? The window of opportunity. And you say, no, that's perfect, because the window of opportunity is now, it's today, it's only for a couple of months, then go for it and give it 10 points. And maybe other ones, you know, I like talking about autonomous factories in the specific case where they're going to make sense. And in many, many instances, they do not make sense. We cannot even do them today. There is only very, you know, a handful of very specific solutions available around the world, I would think. So then you would say, you know, the window of opportunity is not yet there. Maybe we're going to get that in 5 years or whatever, depending on. So that's another criteria then that Marco was suggesting.
Exactly. And we also recorded an episode with Dubro from Conti. He was also part of the group. I will put it in the show notes, because in this episode, we talked a lot about AI project management. It's a good source to get started in this topic, I think. Peter, what else?
And then, of course, it was great to spend the session with Sebastian. Within NXAI is, how should I explain, the guy responsible for doing the training of the different models. Is that set correctly?
Yeah, he's responsible for the XLSTM team, right?
Okay.
And he explained us XLSTM. And, you know, I'm biased there, but I found it interesting that many participants only associated it with language. But XLSTM is more than language. It can also be used well for vision, etc., etc. So that was surprising for me. We need somebody new for communication at NXAI, because nobody knew that.
Yeah, but that's how, weren't they themselves, and also at some point in time when they found out, so they, when was that? Maybe it's half a year ago, I don't know, but they had their first model. And then was it not kind almost by accident, or one of the younger guys just tried it out on vision, on images, and it worked fine and said, oh, look at this.
We have something else.
And I think the question that came up while I was in the breakout with him, same thing for time series, same thing for, you mentioned it, kind of. So that's kind of the expectation. Now, when I asked Sebastian for a specific expectation in where was he going to see the models that come out, so we have the, what is it, the 1B model, and then I think NXAI is running 7B. The 7B model. So where is it going to be? He was kind of, oh, yeah. Well, he was, I assume that maybe he knows, at least has a wish where it's going to be. You know, I asked, like, is it going to be top 3, top 10? Is it going to be number 1? Where is it going to be? If as soon as it's going to be out. And I think one thing is clear, it's going to be completely open source, right? So if then it's going to be made open source and people are going to be trying it out and playing with it, where is it going to reside on the lists, like on Hugging Face? And I think he wasn't just specifically not wanting to say what he was expecting, but everybody has a huge expectation. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And what was very interesting, I had a chat with some participants, and especially the automation guys, and they said, yeah, it's nice. open source, great idea, we'd love to, but we need somebody who helps us to get it plug and play. So I think they need support on LLMs, and especially when it comes to XLSTM, they want to have a support also. So we need to think about that too in the future, I think.
There was one other topic, as I think of it, which was, I think it was related to more, let's say, security. I mean, at least that was my interpretation of it. It had to do with MLOps, but in the end, it was about security, I believe. And Markus said, yeah, they were developing, they were requesting funds for a project, for a paper in the end to be written. But in the end, it was about, can your model be attacked?
Exactly. And
we had some kind of a discussion because I had to ask, well, what are we talking about? We're talking about general security. So are we talking about you need to first come to the first gate, so to say, right? So is this kind of, there's a public key and a private key. I'm not a security specialist, but that is the standard, I believe, right? So there's a key which is available for everybody, and then you get your specific private key, so which would then give you access to whatever, you know, document that resides wherever it is. Very similar to OPC UA, for example, but let's not get in there. But I think that was a very interesting topic, although we were saying, sure, you can go almost as far as, and then the discussion was, is it a more technical thing? How do I get through the first gate if I'm not supposed to have this private key? And then we got into a little bit the topic of the social engineering, you know, because who, I think we said is like, maybe it was the example of Trumpf, I believe, you know, and they gave the example of two, in this case, car manufacturers, which are competitors. And the example was, you know, in one room, they're doing the frame of the Audi, on the other hall next door, they're doing the frame of BMW. And then when you talk social engineering, it's the people who run around, you know, it's the employees, it's the people who have access, who then maybe could theoretically walk from one to the other room. Now, long story short, because it's very specific, although we do need to look at the topic of security of these models at some point in time. So whoever feels, whoever you know. But then there was a very specific topic, and because we're talking XLSTM, and for whatever specific reason that is very technical, XLSTM would not be as, should I say, as easily be attacked as, for example, transformers.
Another topic was edge device and the associated topic of inference without NVIDIA. That was written, I think, three or five times. And I read today NVIDIA is now also building its own LLM. So, yeah.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, this worries the others.
They're using the Meta, some kind of llama, right?
Yeah, but industry is looking for other solutions. As you mentioned, XLSTM could be there. But you have more than that. And that's where Jan Kutnick came into play, combining Gen AI. He's not a real big fan of Gen AI and reinforcement learning. And there was a discussion then with our automation experts in the group and developing use cases for tomorrow, combining both worlds. And yes, maybe also PLCs, combining Gen AI and reinforcement learning to run the PLCs. Future outlook, but we had an episode on that, you remember. Very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I do recall that. I think under the topic of the blue-collar AI, maybe you want to spend just in a moment two words on that, because you did the interview with him, which I listened to sitting in the train, actually, towards Linz, just to know what you guys had talked about. And I believe as the first sub-bullet, it said, I think it was when Jan was presenting himself, is like, and I recall from the interview, what it is that we do not want is robots that play football, as an example. And he was referring to this, I believe it's a Polish woman based in the United States, I believe, and she had this famous quote, which I forgot, but it's the same idea. Let's see that the robots do the dirty, difficult work for us, so we can do the wonderful work, which has to do with creativity and playing football. And that's why the quote was there. What did it say? You know, make sure that the robots, automation, does the work for us.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, do the hard work, the dirty stuff. Yeah.
Sure. And the other thing that was under his name and the blue collar is was in between it. No Gen AI. I think it doesn't mean that he's not using or applying, for example, a large language model user interface to the solutions he has. I think he's more saying, and that's maybe typical for a guy who's been in this market for 20, 30 years. He has seen so many things. And he sees what we've been doing now for 2 years is Gen AI, large language models. And he knows, and that's why the combination with the reinforcement learning, that there's so many other things. But maybe remind of why we put up the term blue collar AI together with Yandir.
Yeah, because he said there are a lot more use cases on the shop floor. Please do not concentrate only on Gen AI use cases. We can solve a lot more problems. And I have a quote from his session. Many companies find it difficult to distinguish between reinforcement learning approaches and optimization problems. They try to solve optimization problems with reinforcement learning. They turn a simple problem into a big problem, often because there are tools for complex problems. And that's a problem for the companies. And I said, we need to find the right tool for the right problem, and then we can find a very good solution. Very interesting. And he reported also on his fuck-up projects. And that was very interesting. He shared projects that didn't went well and why. And that was very interesting for our participants,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
We got a sound of UFU project. Yeah, I think as far as I recall, it was more like a typical element or a recurring element in any project. It's like you start a project and, you know, a difficult situation, an FU comes in and you need to find a solution, and then you move on. And that may repeat itself again. You move on, but there's always, I think that's what he was, that's how I had understood it when we discussed it.
Yeah, exactly. And we always had to slow Jan down because he works with Wolfram Mathematica and he praised it very much. No advertising, but very convinced. Yeah.
It's the first time we had actually heard. Yeah. Many people had not, not even heard. I don't know. But,
the automation guys already bought some licenses.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We allow this as an exception for once. Yeah. That's not the normal thing that we would.
No, it do, was no advertising.
No.
He showed some how to run a model on Wolfram at Mathematica, and yeah, it was quite fast. Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, it's not advertising. Only Jan was very convinced about when it comes to Wolfram Mathematica.
Right. And then we had a wonderful, you didn't join that part because you've been at the KEBA site at Linz already, but we had this wonderful demo presentation in this, let's say, a dark room.
It's not this dark.
I thought it was, we're now going to get a lights out factory, but it's not a factory, but it's like a demonstration area, right?
Exactly. Demonstration for, I would say it's more for C-level of customers. What could be possible with robots automation in the future? Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what we were shown by KEBA. And again, we say thank you very much, of course, to KEBA, to Markus, who invited us, Markus Schatz, who is the CEO of KEBA.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having us there. Yeah, they were very happy as well, I believe. So the guy who organized it, right, Philip, he said, you know, can you come back? Thank you for having brought the conference to us. So, you know, we need to see if we can do that or if we need to, what is the other cities we're thinking? I think
Eindhoven.
Eindhoven was one.
And Prague.
Yeah.
Prague.
and we'll probably do, we talked about Prague, but there were very specific topics that Jan talked about, and then we weren't so certain. When we were on the River Danube, and I saw that the bridges, Rotterdam came into my place, but specifically, I think closest we are looking towards is, of course, the Alps again, and then Eindhoven is probably the next there.
I will finish by briefly explaining how to become part of the group, because after now 20 minutes, maybe there are some people who want to join the group. You can apply for our events on our website. Our next round will take place in the Alps in Zug am Arlberg from 2nd to 4th July next year. Marco, Jan will be our guests again. We are also planning to invite Jakub Tomczak from Eindhoven, and Sepp will definitely be stopping by again. And we always work, as you mentioned, in small groups without PowerPoint and always invite 30 people. Yeah.
Very important. No PowerPoint. We talk to each other. We look each other in the eyes rather than looking at a screen.
Exactly.
Okay. So and the next one is fixed. And the next one that we're thinking about is then possibly Eindhoven, as you say.
Yeah, Eindhoven. Shane from the University of Eindhoven always asked me, when you will come to Eindhoven, please. We want to have AI in Eindhoven conference like yours. Yes, maybe. For all our northern listeners in the north of Germany and in Benelux and Denmark, maybe that's an opportunity for you to come to Eindhoven, because we are very orientated to the south, Peter, right? Austria is our fixed location.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, you and I are based, let's say, from a European perspective, rather in the center, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah.
Sure. At some time, we'd probably love to come to the United Kingdom, you know, going towards the north. You know, the Netherlands is only towards, who knows? Maybe we're going to show up in the one of the northern countries as well.
And too expensive.
No, really?
Yes, is that so? Too expensive.
Oh, there you go. Well, how about one of the southern countries, Spain, Italy? Sure, let's see where we move it. And the other thing is, of course, the combination with, we typically always hold it in combination with a company in the industrial space, like this time Keba. We were invited by Keba. And then typically, you know, we get a factory tour, or in this case, like
the
demonstration that we got there. And it's typically because, and then we have the environment. We have the environment of the industrial company, of the people who are very much involved themselves in industrial AI. And we see already how they applied, or how they are thinking applying industrial AI.
Exactly. And at the end, a big shout out to Barbara, who organized everything from Würzburg. Everybody said, wow, a great organized event. We missed nothing. Good food, good locations. Everything was organized. And thanks also to Albert and NXAI and all the people around this. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to join thanking Barbara. And of course, we want to continue exactly the same way you and I. I mean, I do least in the end. You do a lot of the internal stuff. I look at it. Barbara does a lot of the, or most, if not all of the organization. Thank you also, of course, to Albert Ortig. When I came in and you and I said, oh, Albert said, let's have a coffee. That was the first time that you brought me, that we came to the Tabakfabrik. So as a close off, maybe it's more of my past, my history.
It's the NXAI headwater.
It's the tobacco factory. Yeah. We're not only NXAI. There's many companies you can talk to that. Now, when I saw it, I immediately thought of it's called the Vanilla Coffee and Tea Factory. And I looked at it this morning, actually. And interestingly, the factory in Rotterdam was built before. It was built 29 to 35. And then the tobacco factory was built by a person in itself, maybe less famous, but he had an architecture office, Peter Behrens. And in that one, for those of you listeners who are interested maybe in architecture, he had at the very same time three famous people. Is Walter Gropius, who was the founder later of Bauhaus, Mies van der Rohe and Le Corbusier, they all worked for him. So as a closer, it was so good. And then Albert invited us for dinner. in exactly that factory. And it was very impressive. And the nice thing is that you come to see that still there is not only work, there's not only LinkedIn.
Yeah.
There's also something else still to life.
And that's it, because I need to record an episode with ASML in 5 minutes, Peter. So thanks a lot. You can listen to the episode, I think, in 3 weeks. So I have to prepare myself a bit.
Very good. Ask him if we can come and join them with our conference. And
exactly, look at I will do that.
The production of the wonderful chip production machines when we come to Eindhoven.
Perfect. Peter, thank you. Bye-bye.
Robert, take care. Bye-bye.